Well, good morning. My name is Diane Rowland. I'm from the University of Florida in the Agronomy Department. And today I want to talk to you about a new crop that's been introduced into Florida. Sesame has been grown commercially in the last 2 years in the state. And currently in 2014, we have 6,000 acres of commercial production of the crop in the North Central Florida region. So my lab group has been working with the crop over the last 4 years to try to determine the best agronomic practices to produce the crop sustainably in that region. So I'm going to start out today just talking a little bit about why sesame is important. If you're not familiar with sesame, there is a tremendous global market for the crop, both as an oil and as a product that's added to several different food products as a seed. And the U.S. certainly has a role in that market. We currently produce non-shattering varieties in the U.S. that were developed by the Sesico Corporation. And internationally, though, most of the crop is shattering cultivars, which have to be hand harvested. So our crop can be mechanically harvested, and we also tend to have a very high quality crop that is valued on the global market. So we certainly have a role in this crop. Nationally and historically, it's been grown in the U.S. In the southwestern portion, centered primarily around Texas and Oklahoma. But with the droughts in the last 5 to 10 years, Sesico has been looking for other regions to produce the crop and has focused its search really in the south and in the southeast. And Florida has certainly been a partner in that option. For Florida, the crop represents a lot of benefits to the state. First of all, being a rotational option in the North Central region, many of our growers don't have marketable agronomic options, and so you can see growers that grow 10 to 15 years of continuous peanut, which we know is a major problem. And so sesame represents an option that they have to improve their rotation, and it is economically viable, and I'll show you that in just a little bit. But the crop also brings some ecosystem services with it. In particular, it's drought tolerant. So we have a lot of water quantity issues in Florida, particularly. And so the drought tolerance is certainly a benefit. And then it's also a low fertility requirement, has a low fertility requirement. So our water quality issues are also benefited by the crop. So my lab has focused really in three main objectives over the last 4 years. First, we started out looking at just establishing the crop, the best methods to get it up and growing in our region. Then we began to screen different varieties and different cultivars that were available to really determine which cultivars were best suited for our region. And then we started to begin in this year look at crop management, in particular the irrigation requirements of the crop, developing irrigation scheduling, as well as fertility options. Weed control is also a really important agronomic issue, and that's being studied by my colleague Jay Farrell at UF. In the future, we hope to really start to test some cropping systems, so incorporating it into the cropping systems that we currently have and developing new systems as we go. So I'm not an agronomist, I'm not a trained agronomist, but my background is in physiology. So within these agronomic trials, we've built in a lot of basic physiological research, which allows us to look at, for example, the phenological development of the crop. We've focused a lot of our investigations on the root system, trying to understand the rooting architecture and its access to nutrients and water. And we've done some very basic physiological studies as well, and of course, also looked at yield and quality of the crop and measured some of the environmental and ecosystem services surrounding the crop. So I'm going to show you a series of pictures if you're not familiar with the crop, what it looks like establishing in our region. There's planting and we've got seedling emergence. One issue with the crop is that up to about 40 days after planting, it doesn't allocate a lot of biomass above ground, so it makes growers very nervous. It will emerge, produce a couple of leaves, and then kind of sit there. And basically what's happening is that it's translocating all of its resources below ground and establishing an extremely robust root system. Then about 40 days after planting, it will begin flowering, and it will go on to form a flowering stem with capsules that that are formed on it. In our region, it typically senesces naturally by about 120 days after planting, but our commercial growers are using a harvest day to terminate the crop at about 110 to maintain the maturity uniformity of the crop. So I'm going to go through some of our results in these trials that we've conducted for the last 4 years, starting with our crop establishment studies, where we first focused on just how to get it planted, what the best plant spacings were, and when to plant it. We started out by drilling the crop in two spacings, 7.5 and 15, because we figured that drilling would give us our best options for weed control in our region, which is a tremendous challenge with any crop, but particularly for sesame. And so we here we see 7.5 and 15 inch spacings for two commercial cultivars, S26 and S32. And across the 3 years, we don't see any consistent benefit between those two spacings. But what we do see is that the variability in yield is much higher in the 7.5 spacing. And so what we hypothesized is that at those narrower spacings, we're getting much interplant competition, much more interplant competition, both at the seedling stage. And because these two cultivars are branched cultivars, then that competition is probably exacerbated once it hits that vegetative stage and eventual flowering. So this gives you an example of a single stem, S30 and S26 is a branched. And so you can see that the interplant competition is much greater with the branched cultivars. We went on to investigate this by adding another spacing, a 30-inch spacing in this case. So I'm showing you the comparison between 7.5, 15, and 30-inch. In this case, this is not drilled. This is vacuum planted, and some of our growers have gone to that system. And we're looking at four different commercial cultivars. And what I'd like to do is concentrate first on these center two. And this follows our hypothesis where for S30, which is a single stem cultivar, we see pretty good production potential at 7.5 and decreasing as we increase our spacing, whereas a branched S32, it has a greater yield potential at a wider spacing. However, if you look at S26 and S36 on the outer side here, that doesn't hold, and so that's probably due to the degree of branching among those different cultivars. So basically what we've told growers is that we recommend drilling the crop at 15-inch spacing, which would incorporate, have fairly consistent yield results for both single and branched cultivars that are available. The planting date results are also quite consistent and do match what's been done in the Southwest as well. Our greatest yield potential of plantings in May, and that drops off in June and July, and this is a photoperiod sensitive crop, so that makes sense. That's consistent for different varieties. In 2013, we tested S26 and S30. So this issue is really important for our region because when we talk about incorporating it into our rotational options, some very good options are with vegetables and with potatoes. So those crops are coming out in June, so that means that our sesame crop wouldn't go in until late June or July, and so we need to keep that in mind when we're designing our cropping systems that we probably would experience a yield detriment by those later plantings. Our second objective, the second year that we were studying things, was to really try to screen the varieties, the commercial varieties that are available. And that's important because, remember, these cultivars are developed for the southwestern region. They're not for the southeast. So it was important to really try to understand the variability in our region. So this gives you an example of the types of results that we've seen in our cultivar trials. This is in 2013, and we're looking at both commercial cultivars as well as breeding lines. And you don't see a lot of variability except in experiment 4, which went on to become a commercial variety S39. So that tells me that we're really not taking advantage of the variability that Sesico has available. So we've been working with the breeders to go back to some of those lines that they've kind of discarded for the Southwest and try to screen those for our southeastern production conditions. Within our variety trials, we've really focused on trying to understand the rooting architecture as well on top, and we've done that using mini rhizotrons, and this shows you a series of images across the season. This is at 30, 60, 75, 90, and 120 days after planting. So we're able to follow the development of the root system by depth and by depth region, and then the eventual senescence. And we have found that there is variability among the cultivars in both the depth and the speed at which the root system is developed, as well as just the overall architectural patterns. Anecdotally, we've measured roots down to 9 feet in our sandy soils, and the variability of that root system is very low, so it's quite consistent throughout that profile. That has really important implications, again, for our region, because that means the crop can scavenge nutrients that are often leached in our systems in our very sandy soils, so that's an important ecosystem service, as well as take advantage of deep moisture during periods of drought and dry down. So the third objective that we've tackled is in crop management, and that's just initiated this year. And we've really focused on water. Water is a tremendous issue in this north central region. And so we've been looking at irrigation response. So we ran a trial with 4 commercial cultivars using irrigated and non-irrigated conditions, really to understand which cultivars were responding better to irrigation. We don't have the yield data because this is just harvested, but we do have the number of nodes that contained capsules, so that's really a surrogate for probably what we can expect for yields. We did see variability in the response to irrigation among cultivars. So, for example, if you look at S34, there's not a lot of variability between non-irrigated and irrigated conditions, whereas S32, you do see a fairly strong response to irrigation. And so that's important for growers that have limited water resources, then they can choose the cultivar that has the better response to irrigation. However, cultivar choice is not only important, but crop choice is important when we determine how water resources should be delegated. So here I'm showing you the returns, or the dollars per acre, for the different crops that have potential for production in our region. Sesame is over here on the left, cotton, corn, soybean, and peanut. We're looking at the returns, dollars per acre, for both for non-irrigated and irrigated crops, using commodity prices that are low, average, and high for our model. And under non-irrigated conditions, you can see that sesame at an average price has a fairly close return to peanut. So peanut really is the primary crop that's grown in that region. So you can see that non-irrigated conditions, it's economically feasible. But then when you look down here at irrigated, we actually can see a better return for sesame in comparison to peanut. And that's because Sesico provides a benefit, a cost benefit to irrigated production, because it's more, it has higher quality. So based on these results, we can see that sesame definitely has economic potential in our region. It has good returns in comparison to the other crops that have potential to be grown. So in the future, we would like to examine, again, incorporating it into the cropping systems that we have in the region, and really trying to develop some new cropping systems that we can offer to growers. One of the primary ecosystem services that we think it can bring into our rotations is pollinator attraction. So working with an entomologist at UF, they've done some surveys in the crop and found that the diversity within the crop for pollinators is extremely high and atypical for other agronomic crops. In particular, it is very attractive to native bees, native pollinators, and that is a really important environmental issue in the state right now. So it really does provide a benefit from the pollinator aspect. In addition, it has nematicidal properties, and again, from a rotational option, that's important because we're talking about rotating it with peanut and with potato. Both crops have issues with nematodes, and so sesame could definitely provide a benefit there. It could also serve as a replant option for crops that have stand failures for peanut or cotton in the early spring, because we do have the option of planting it later, so it's a good replant option as well. So overall, because the inputs are fairly low and low risk, we see that it is an economically viable as well as environmentally viable crop for our region. So with that, I'd like to thank Ray Langham and Eric Bukava, which are the breeders for Sesico. They worked with us very closely on these projects, and we appreciate their help. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Weed control.
That is a huge issue, and right now it's very limited. We have Dual, which is being labeled for the state, but we have noticed injury issues with Dual Magnum. We've been using the highest possible rates just because that was first recommended, but I don't think the company realized that in our sandy soils with our rainfall, that provided quite a risk for injury. So Dr. Jay Farrell is working very hard on developing those options. Right now we have drilling, which helps definitely hold down the weeds. And there, some growers have gone in that have vacuum planted it and are doing cultivation prior to that real jump in the flowering stock. Yes?
Yeah, what was the natural rate and the natural uptake if you measure it? And then how deep were the roots?
So there's a lot of questions in there. Let me make sure I understand. So my graduate student, Annie Couch, has actually created a nutrient budget, and she presented a poster, unfortunately, yesterday, number 510, but we'd be happy to give you those numbers. Commercially, it's recommended about 60 to 70 pounds of N, and so in comparison to our other agronomic crops, it's very low. And we did notice differences in rooting depth, more pronounced differences in the architecture of the root, its root system itself, so the layers of soil where the roots proliferate tends to be different. And the senescence of the root system, which I was kind of surprised at, the rate of senescence did differ between the cultivars.
Okay.